Good to be with you all this morning. When was the last time that you were exhorted from behind the pulpit regarding stupidity? Growing up, saying that word, just saying that word, was always a risky proposition. Mom and Dad weren't always fans of that word, and maybe it had something to do with we weren't always using it appropriately, perhaps, I don't know, so long ago. As harsh as that word can be, it's a biblical and a modern-day reality. Stupidity exists all around us. Being stupid is a real thing. It's in the Bible, and it's important that we try to avoid being stupid. There's a quote that says, "Life is hard. It's harder when you're stupid." And we might smile, or we might chuckle at that, because we all know that it's true. Today, let's flip that quote around, and let's turn it into something a little bit more positive. Life is hard, but it's easier when you have the wisdom of God. And that's better, isn't it? And it's just as true as the first statement. Proverbs 12:1 says, "Whoever loves instruction loves knowledge, but he who hates correction is stupid." There, see? It's in the scripture, New King James Version. No one woke up this morning, I feel very confident saying this, no one woke up this morning and said, "Today, I'm going to be stupid." No one's first thought this morning upon rising is, "I'm going to do something dumb. I'm going to make a mistake. I know what the right thing is to do, but you know what? I'm going to do the other thing instead." No one said that. All of us had every intention, sincere intention, of waking up this morning and doing everything right. We want to do what's right. That's what we want to do, but sometimes we just don't do that, do we? We all want to be wise, so how do we get that wisdom? Well, James tells us, he starts his letter with a wonderful promise in James 1:5, "If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all liberally and without reproach, and it will be given to him." And first off, he starts off that verse 5 with a big two-letter word. That big two-letter word, if, I-F, if. If any of you lacks wisdom. And I like that he gives the reader, I like that he gives us the benefit of the doubt there, where he says, if any of you lacks wisdom. Anyone in here already maxed out on wisdom? Anyone hit their lifetime quota for amount of wisdom? No, I think all of us in here, once again, all of us in here need more wisdom. All of us in here want more wisdom. We'd like to get to that point where we know what to do in every situation. We know the right things to say. We know how to handle anything when it pops up. We're never going to get there. So every day needs to be a pursuit after the wisdom that comes from God. I really appreciate that we're assured that God will not only give us wisdom, but we're told the manner in which he will give us this wisdom. We're told how God will give us this wisdom. And what does James tell us here? How does he quantify that amount of wisdom? Liberally. He's going to give us wisdom liberally. He's not going to be stingy with it. He's not going to just give us a ration of it. "Well, I'm going to give you this much wisdom, and I'm going to see what you do with it before I give you any more." No, he's going to give it to us liberally. We love when things are given to us that we like in a liberal fashion, don't we? The good things in life, the conveniences, the comforts, the nice stuff. We like when those things are given to us liberally. All that we need, all that we want, we have. I remember growing up, going to church meetings with Mom and Dad. A lot of times we'd be on a tight schedule and a tight budget. And if you're going somewhere and need to stop somewhere along the way for lunch or for supper before a weekend meeting, tight schedule, tight budget, where do you go? Well, you go to Taco Bell, don't you? At least that's what we did in the 90s. We went to Taco Bell because that's a great place if you're going somewhere fast with a lot of folks in the van and a budget. I remember we would sit in the drive-thru lines, and the sisters and I, we would look at each other and we would think, "I wonder how liberal Mom and Dad are going to be. How many items are Mom and Dad going to allow us to have?" Because that was a thing. Mom and Dad would probably converse either beforehand or maybe in the spur of the moment, and they would say, "All right, kids, you get 2 items today." And then we could start making our decisions. Well, what 2 items do we want to get? Sometimes it was 3 items. Boy, were those the days. Sometimes it was 1 item. And 1 item at Taco Bell, you really have to start making decisions as far as calories per dollar, you know, weight of the food. It's got to last us till the first basket dinner. Fast forward a few years, The older three girls had kind of moved on to doing their own thing, and I had the opportunity to travel with Dad by myself. Those were some good trips, because you know what? When you travel with Dad by yourself, and you might or might not be his only son, you're given special privileges. And when we go through the Taco Bell drive-thru line, guess how many items Dad said I could have? Whatever you want. As much as you want. Liberally. And that's what God does for us as well. If we need wisdom, we do need wisdom. Ask for it, and God's going to give it to us liberally. He's the same way with wisdom, and praise God for that. That's good news for all of us. So the question for us this morning is, what does God's wisdom look like, and how can we demonstrate that in our own lives? What does it look like? How do we know it when we see it? Well, as Brother Mike read for us this morning, and I appreciate that reading, James 3, 17 and 18, we have the answer to both of those questions. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. Now the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. So first off, we're told there that God's wisdom is pure. Because God is pure, everything that comes from him is pure. The word pure in this passage means free from moral stain. Stains are nasty. Stains are hard to get rid of. No one in here is a fan of stain. No one looks forward to their kids coming inside the house after playing with stains. No one likes stains. One summer while I was in college, I worked with a small construction crew. I remember one of the jobs that we offered, one of the services we offered, was pressure washing. I liked when we got the pressure wash. That was my choice. If we got to do a job that beats shingling, it beats siding, it beats building a fence, it beats concrete work, pressure washing. That's the job that I always looked forward to doing. And I remember one summer, one of the jobs that we had was pressure washing this lady's deck. And this lady admits to us that it had been 20 years since anything had been done with the deck. 20 years of sitting in the elements. 20 years of collecting mold and dirt and just age. You can imagine in your head what this deck looks like after 20 years of no care. With nothing more than air pressure forcing the water out at 1,400 PSI, the power washer stripped away clean, 20 years of buildup, 20 years of gunk, 20 years of mold, 20 years of mildew. It was incredible how different, how clean, and how new that deck looked in just a few short hours. That deck had become stain-free. We as Christians can be a lot like that old wooden deck. We are prone to carry around layers of bitterness, carry around layers of frustration, doubt, skepticism that cling to the soul and produce a kind of discolorization. Like the 20 years of gunk on that deck, spiritual jaundice is certainly and can be hard to remove. But when we can learn how to forgive, when we can learn how to show mercy, love to our friends, family, neighbors, and yes, even our enemies, when we practice kindness, when we speak encouraging words, when we seek to build one another up, we demonstrate the wisdom of God. We show what the wisdom of God looks like in our lives. We all have the opportunity to ask God for wisdom to stay pure, to not become like that old unwashed deck, saturated with years of pain, years of regret, years of pain and pent-up anger brought on by years of practicing worldly wisdom. Matthew 5 and 8 says, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God." When our hearts are pure, we will see God. And when we see God, we see what his wisdom looks like. We see what he's after. We see what we're supposed to do, how we're supposed to think, the words that we're supposed to say, the actions that we're supposed to take. But we have to be pure in heart first. It starts with purity. How much do we want to be pure? Number two, God's wisdom is peaceable. Wisdom that comes from heaven is peaceable or peace-loving. Does anyone know here someone that just doesn't want to get along? Anyone have anyone like that in your life? Maybe you work with them. Maybe they're a fellow student. Maybe there's someone in your neighborhood that just never seems to want to get along. They'd rather argue than discuss. They speak when they should listen. They seem to thrive on division and chaos rather than unity and organization. They're never satisfied with the truth. It seems like all they ever want to do is just get to their next question. These folks are not peacemakers. These folks that we all know are peace breakers. The Greek word translated peaceable speaks to our attitude in times of conflict. What is our attitude in times of conflict? Attitude in times when there is confusion, when not everyone agrees. on a particular topic or a particular issue? What is our attitudes in times of conflict when there doesn't seem to be a clear answer for what's right, for what the plan needs to be? Is our attitude godly? If we're practicing the wisdom that comes from above, from God, then that attitude should be peaceable. James has already said in 3:14 through 16, he's already talked about the kind of wisdom that is earthly, the kind of wisdom that is unspiritual, the wisdom that we need to stay away from. James 3:14 through 16. But if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your heart, do not boast and lie against the truth. This wisdom does not descend from above, but is earthly, sensual, demonic. For where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing are there. That sort of wisdom is what we see in the world every day. That is a sort of wisdom that brings chaos with it wherever it goes. It builds on the confusion. In today's day and age, it seems that anyone and everyone that has Wi-Fi and an opinion seems to think that they are right and know what to do. They've got the answer. I know what to do. I saw it on TV. I read it on the internet. I listened to it on a podcast. Well, I Googled it, and here's what I found. Multiple studies have shown. All right, so you have knowledge. Okay, you found a piece of the truth, some knowledge. You think you're right. Well, how peaceable is that knowledge? How peaceable is that knowledge? How peaceable is proving you're right with earthly matters? Just because you're right doesn't mean that you're being righteous. James 1:19, earlier on in the letter, my dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. That is godly wisdom. Quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to anger. That's the wisdom that comes from God. Do we see that in the world today? Could you imagine if you turned on the TV today, turn it on to the CNN or Fox News or any other affiliate, any other channel for that matter. You turn on the TV and you listen to folks being quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to anger. How boring would that TV be? You'd quickly turn the channel. That's not what folks are listening for. That's not what it's all about out there. That's not worldly wisdom. That doesn't make sense to them. Can you imagine if someone made a point about something on TV and the person on the other side of the table said, you know what, I hadn't considered that before. Let me think about that and get back to you. You know what, you do make a good point there. I hadn't considered that. You don't see that on TV today because that's not what works in the world today. TV today is what is talked about in Proverbs. A fool vents all of his feelings. That's what TV is today. That's worldly wisdom, and that is not peaceable. My dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. That's godly wisdom. That's peaceable. And that needs to be our attitudes in times of conflict. It was Victor Hugo who was quoted as saying the following, "The eldest child of wisdom is caution." If wisdom were to have children, the eldest child would then be caution. God's wisdom is a wisdom of caution. When that wisdom fills our lives, we will become agents for healing and reconciliation. A peace-loving person brings peace with him when he enters the room. He's the opposite of the human tornado who wreaks havoc in every situation. Because he is at peace with God, he is at peace with himself, and he brings an atmosphere of peace with him. God's wisdom is not only pure and peaceable, but God's wisdom is also, the third aspect, God's wisdom is also gentle. Wisdom that comes from heaven is gentle, or another way of saying that, God's wisdom is considerate. This quality is hard to capture in only one English word. It means non-combative, it means not quarrelsome, it means not easily annoyed. It's very similar to being peaceable. It's similar to patience. These two attributes of godly wisdom run parallel with each other. You discover when you're gentle when tempers are short. You discover whether you're gentle or not when you're worn out after a long day or a long week. You discover whether you're gentle when the demands of life overwhelm you, or when someone tells you that you're wrong when you know that you're right. That's when you find out if you're gentle or not. Similar to patience, you really find out when it's tested. I can say that I'm a patient man, but when that patience is actually tested, then I find out if I'm a patience man. The same is true with being gentle. I'd love to think that I'm a gentle man. I'd love to think that I handle things gently. But what happens when these things pop up in my lives? When tempers run short, when patience run out, when you're tired after a long day or a long week, that's when you find out if you're gentle. How do you respond under pressure? Are you gentle or do you just get out the hammer? Godly wisdom is a wisdom of gentleness, and we need this kind of wisdom when we deal with difficult people. I've heard this quality called before a sweet reasonableness. And reasonableness just flows off the tongue, doesn't it? You got to think about it before you say it because it can kind of trip you up a little bit. But a sweet reasonableness. Some of my favorite people on planet Earth are folks that are great at demonstrating sweet reasonableness. They're pure. They're peaceful. They're gentle. It doesn't matter what's going on around them. They seem to live in this bubble where it's fine. They show a sweet reasonableness. Godly gentleness is a necessity in so many of the situations we find ourselves in this life. We need it when dealing with Christians who sin unknowingly. We need it with friends who disappoint us. We need it with strangers that don't know any better, and we need it with family that does know better. We need it when raising children. We need to be gentle when shining our lights and sowing seeds of righteousness. If we truly believe in Jesus, we can be gentle. Why? Because he has been so gentle with us. Psalm 103 and 10, he has not dealt with us according to our sins, nor punished us according to our iniquities. Aren't you glad that God doesn't deal with us according to our iniquities? If he did, none of us would have any shot of getting to heaven. But God is gentle, and he deals with us on a daily basis with purity, with peacefulness, and with gentleness. If we got what we deserved, we'd never make it to heaven. To be directly honest, we wouldn't even make it to tomorrow. But God is gentle, and God is wise. His dealings with us are peaceful. Because we have received mercy, we can show mercy to others. Remember what Jesus has done for us, then go and do likewise. God's wisdom is pure, it's peaceable, it's gentle, and it is persuadable. Wisdom that comes from heaven is, another way of saying this, is submissive. This quality may be easier to see if we flip it around. This quality is the earthly wisdom. When we see earthly wisdom, it's arrogant and stubborn. That's the opposite of persuadable. That's the opposite of submissive. It refuses to listen and has no desire to hear anyone else's opinion. Earthly wisdom asks questions not for the sake of understanding and unity, but for the sake of dominance and division. A person like this dominates every discussion and demands to be the center of attention in every room they enter. They attack anyone who attacks them because they mask a fragile ego with their terrible temper and their penchant for threats. These types of folks aren't listening to understand. They're not listening to get your side of the story. They're not trying to learn anything from you. They're simply listening in order to reply. They're ready to go halfway through your sentence. That's not very persuadable at all. That's arrogant. That's stubborn. God's wisdom looks nothing like that. God's wisdom is willing to listen. God's wisdom is willing to learn. God's wisdom is open for discussion. The Greek word here means easy to persuade. A person with this quality listens carefully because they want to know the truth. They want to know how you're thinking. They want to know why you're thinking how you're thinking. And don't mistake this for being a pushover. Don't mistake this for being someone who has no conviction, no belief in how they feel. A persuadable person holds deep convictions without feeling the need to parade them or to constantly argue about them. A person like this listens to others with whom he disagrees because he believes everyone has something to teach him. I believe that I can learn from anyone and everyone, regardless of whether you're right or wrong. I can learn from you. We can learn together. Can we disagree agreeably? Can we disagree agreeably? How hard is that? It's really easy to say it up here. It's really easy to say it in front of dear brothers and sisters that share a like and precious faith that think the same way that I do. Sure, we can all disagree agreeably. I can do that with each and every one of you in here. But when I step out into the real world, that's where the test really happens. Can I disagree agreeably? Can we discuss our deep convictions without losing our temper? Can we listen kindly to someone who holds another position? Can we simply just be kind? Maybe it just boils down to that. Maybe that simple question. Can we just be kind? It was about 10 years ago or so, I was getting ready to have lunch at a member's house from Excelsior Springs. This family has a Sunday dinner tradition that I'm sure is probably similar to a lot of Sunday dinner traditions around here. Before they get ready to eat, they sit and they say a prayer, and they go around and every person at the table contributes to the prayer. They each say their own individual prayer, or they chip in with their own line or two of what they're thankful for, or what they need to ask God for. And I really like that tradition. Well, it got to a four-year-old boy who was at the table at the time. And this four-year-old boy is the only prayer from that Sunday afternoon that I can remember 10 years later. Because it was the most sincere prayer that I might have ever heard in my life. This four-year-old boy might have used the word kind a dozen times. A dozen sentences all involving kindness. He knew the importance of kindness. Help me to be kind to my brothers and sisters. Help them to be kind to me. Help me to be kind to my parents. Help my parents to be kind to me. Help me say things that are kind. And it went on and on, at least a dozen different times. There's kindness, kindness, kindness. That is the pure wisdom of God. A sincere, peaceable, and gentle plea for kindness. Being kind runs directly parallel with being persuadable. You're not always right. Did you know that? You're not always right. And you don't always need to speak up about everything that comes through your head. That's not kind to anyone. If we're practicing, if we're displaying, we're exemplifying godly wisdom in our lives, it should manifest itself in how kind we are to one another. And that starts with listening more and talking less. Francis Bacon said, "Silence is the sleep that nourishes wisdom." Pythagoras was quoted as saying, "A fool is known by his speech, and a wise man by his silence." And my mom has often been quoted as saying, "You have two ears and one mouth, Sam. Be quiet." God's wisdom is pure, it's peaceable, it's gentle, it's persuadable. And wrapping up today, God's wisdom is sincere. Wisdom that comes from heaven is, as it says in the New King James Version, without hypocrisy. Or I think a more fitting way to say, godly wisdom is sincere. Sincere means free from pretense, free from deceit, proceeding from genuine feelings. That's what sincerity is. Sincerity is not being dishonest. Sincerity is not being hypocritical. Think about when you're signing off on a letter or signing off on an email. A lot of us have seen or used the word sincerely when we finish up that letter or email. Well, what are we saying when we sign off with sincerely? Or what's the sender saying to us when they sign off with sincerely? Well, hopefully what it means coming to us is that they mean what they said. They put some thought into what is being said. What they said is the truth. They cared about the message, so sincerely is the sign off. Godly wisdom is all about thoughtfulness. Godly wisdom is all about truthfulness. Godly wisdom is all about caring for those that we interact with. You mean it, you care, you put thought into it. In the Greek original of the New Testament, the word used means judged in the sunlight. And the English word is derived from the Latin sine sera, which means without wax. In the days when art flourished in ancient Greece, it was the common practice to perform a repair with invisible wax on any vase or statue that had, as a result of carelessness or misadventure, been damaged. A rich man or a person of high rank might employ a sculptor to chisel his bust in marble. Sometimes, if the chisel slipped, the end of the nose would be chipped off. Rather than go to all the trouble of making a new bust, the sculptor would mend the features with wax that the flaw could not be detected unless by very close scrutiny, and palm off on the customer his defective workmanship. If the client happened to be a knowing person, he would carry the finished statuette out of the studio into the open before paying for it and examine it carefully in the sunlight. Otherwise, in course of time, he would have the chagrin of seeing the nose drop off his statuette in the heated room of his house. The statue was not sincere, not without wax, and could not bear careful scrutiny in the sunlight. Is the wisdom that we practice in our daily lives sincere? Does it stand up in the light? Will it stand up in the light? How we live our lives, our relationships with one another, how we behave when we're not around each other, when we're not around our brothers and sisters in Christ. Are we being sincere? how we speak, how we communicate? Do we have a sincere love for Jesus and his church, a sincere desire to do what's right, a sincere zeal to leave this world behind? Do you really want to leave this world behind? Do you? I hope that you're sincere in that. This world is not our home. Do you sincerely want to leave? We might be able to fake it for a lifetime down here, but there will come a time. There will come a day when we're drawn out into the light, when the light is put on us to test our sincerity. There is coming a day. The harvest is coming, and there will be a harvest. James 3 and 18 explains what happens when we live according to God's wisdom. Now, the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. Demonstrating godly wisdom in a Christian life means a life filled with sowing. Filled with sowing. Nonstop sowing. Sowing seeds of righteousness, sowing the gospel of Christ, both. When you think about sowing, it's rarely a instant gratification, is it? It's extremely rare when you sow something and you immediately see the fruits of your labor. You immediately see a harvest. But we get those in this life, don't we? You can all probably think of some harvests in your life that have come quickly. You sow and you get to see the good that comes from it right away. I think about the season of life that Kelsey and I are currently in, raising young children. There's a lot of immediate harvest in the sowing that we do as parents. And it's nice to see those. It helps to offset the other ones that haven't quite brought fruit yet. But I think about showing Veda some of the books that I read growing up and then seeing her enjoy those same books. That was easy sowing of seed with a fantastic harvest, and that was rewarding. I think about showing Amos how to hold a golf club. And I don't know if it's right or wrong, Amos. No one's really good at golf. And seeing him make good contact with the ball. That was a quick sowing with an immediate harvest, and that felt good. Teaching Vera how to sing You Are My Sunshine. Boy, it took a day, and I got to see the fruit of my labor there. Those immediate harvests are nice, and they help give us the motivation and the added discipline to keep sowing to the harvests that aren't so quick. While those harvests came immediately after sowing, most things in life worth harvesting don't come that quickly. Sometimes, when it comes to matters of spreading the gospel, winning others to the Lord through the practice of godly wisdom, sometimes it takes more than days. It takes more than weeks. Sometimes it takes years before you see the fruits of your labor, before God gives the increase. We plant and we water and we wait. We plant and we water and we wait. Worldly wisdom is full of discord, pain, unforgiveness, bitterness, confusion. Godly wisdom is peace. Godly wisdom is forgiveness. Godly wisdom is kindness. Now, the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. The key word there is sow. Every day, we need to be sowing the seeds of a godly wisdom. We sow seeds by greeting others with a smile. We sow seeds by choosing kindness, forgiveness, and patience. We sow seeds by loving our enemies and doing good to them. We sow seeds of peace when we decide not to pass along a juicy rumor, when we decide not to argue about politics, and we sow seeds of peace by being faithful to God over the long haul. We plant and we water and we wait. As we close this morning and offer the gospel invitation, a friendly and a loving reminder of two truths. Two truths. Number one, Jesus is coming soon. And truth number two, or he's coming even sooner. If that's not good news to you as it should be, then the question for you this morning is, why isn't that good news? Why isn't it good news that Jesus is coming soon? Why isn't it good news that Jesus is potentially coming sooner? Whether Jesus comes sooner or he comes sooner, let's make sure that we're using whatever time we have left wisely. And the wisdom that we ought to be spending our time using is the wisdom that comes from God. Wisdom isn't knowing everything, it's trusting in him who does. If you've yet to be baptized for the remission of your sin, if you've yet to put on Christ in baptism, if you've yet to take that first step towards salvation, we encourage you to do so as we stand and as we sing the final selected number.